We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What up, listener? We wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this Blue Wire podcast. Be sure to show your support to this pod by subscribing and dropping a 5-star review on iTunes, a follow on Spotify, or the appropriate dApp for any other platform you might be listening on. And if you're enjoying this show, chances are you'll like one of our 75 other sports podcasts. Find more shows you'll love at BlueWirePods.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Hey, Dynasty Command Center Nation, this is Curtis Patrick. I'm here with Travis May today. It is episode 41 of the Dynasty Command Center podcast. We're going to talk about Travis's really cool, super unique, really fun Dynasty Twitter mega rookie draft. We got everybody involved in this thing. We wanted to know where you stand on these rookies. We're going to have our comments. If you want to know where he and I stand, you got to go to rotoviz.com. and buy the Dynasty Command Center Rookie Guide. It's got my ranks, Travis's ranks, Sean Siegel's ranks, TJ Calkins, and Blair Andrews. It's all in the soup. You can see where we are as a consensus as a team. We've got all the metrics, all the analysis. We've got mock drafts of our own that we did. Everything that you need to get up on where this rookie class is in that guide. There's three issues. It's $5 an issue. You buy them all at once. We ship them to you. Just buy it and forget it, and it's going to be in your email, and you'll be ready to dominate. Rotoviz.com 2020 Rookie Guide.
Yeah, Curtis, I'm just pumped to talk about this rookie class and this rookie draft that I've been doing here for a few years now. If you followed me on Twitter for very long at all, and you can do so at FF_TravisM, you might be familiar with this mega rookie draft type situation I run via Twitter polls every single year. While it's not a perfect process, I do try to capture what is consensus right now about this time, because the college football season's over, the college football playoff is over, the combine hasn't even happened yet. In fact, we don't even know the list of players that are invited to the NFL combine just yet, but still we have an idea of where we would rank players at this time of year. At least those that might call themselves experts probably do. And so I try to gather from all sorts of different sources, pull from basically 20 or so different experts rankings that I have access to, and then a few different draft capital projection tools to kind of pull in the top players that I believe are going to be drafted in rookie drafts, at least if your rookie draft was today, and then put those players in a Twitter poll. And so, you only have four players. It's not like everyone's voting for their number one player overall at once. There's going to be different players that people like, but the goal is let's get close enough, as close as we can, to what people think right now, to kind of create a baseline value, or at least create the illusion of a baseline value for these rookies, whether it be running backs, wide receivers. This year is not crazy with the tight ends and quarterbacks, but just going to be talking about all the top players and where the votes came in, and I guess try to separate these players up into some tiers based on the results from this crazy Twitter poll that's actually coming up on 10,000 overall total votes already. So, Curtis, I'm excited to dive into this. And I'm really not surprised by the top end of these players, but and really, I think it says something to how I guess the running back position is being valued. I mean, you look at the very top of the draft board these days.
Yeah, this was really cool. I kind of watched this from afar as you were compiling these votes over probably at least the last week. It took a little bit to get through this thing. But it's really cool to get the opinions of everybody out there in the community and compare and contrast them with where we're at, because, you know, I think the community is getting smarter and smarter, and everyone is probably basing, you know, their takes or their rankings off of, you know, analysis they've read from a trusted, you know, fantasy site somewhere out there, and maybe they do some analysis themselves, and it's kind of a mixture. But, you know, this is almost like, all right, well, if you summed up all the fantasy advice that's out there, this is how it's being applied to the masses. So it's kind of interesting too. It's not just the Twitter dynasty community. In some ways, I think in reverse engineering this might be where if you put it all in a big chili pot together, RotoViz and DLF and everybody else that's out there doing this stuff, this might be what those rankings look like. I mean, I don't know. That'd be pretty interesting to test, actually. But let's just get into this. And you know, Travis went through this, and it's you know, unscientifically dividing this into tiers, but based off of like where there were large margins of victory. Okay. And so based off of the overwhelming response for the, you know, the 101 and the very first poll that he put up, it's a tier one all by itself, as far as the community is concerned. Who is the running back at the 101, Travis?
Yeah, so DeAndre Swift from Georgia took down 55% of the vote, and there was a few thousand votes on just this one poll, way more than any of the other polls, just because it's the first pick and everyone's all hyped to start voting on rookies. But yeah, Swift took down 55% of the vote, and that's with J.K. Dobbins being there, that's with Jonathan Taylor being there, that's with I believe Jerry Jeudy being on there as well. All players that should get draft capital that have been hyped up already in this offseason. I thought it was going to be a lot closer than that, but he actually won by, I think the nearest player was 36% away from him. So it was just clear runaway, top tier one all by himself. And I think a lot of people are probably at first glance a little confused by that, because you know, Swift doesn't have the kind of crazy raw numbers that a Jonathan Taylor has. He doesn't have the perfect, you know, crazy receiving profile that, you know, a Christian McCaffrey had when he came out. So why is Swift just this far and away better player than a J.K. Dobbins, than a Jonathan Taylor, than a Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb or whoever else might be in the conversation? And to me, I think it's just because he's good at everything. Like I don't see any glaring hole in his game. And so I don't know where you are, Curtis, but I do have Swift, right up in that conversation as the top player. But do you have him as your first overall?
No, I don't have him as my first overall. I've got, Taylor as my first overall. I do have Swift as my number two. Yeah. And so the biggest difference that I would have, and again, you know, there's no way for us to know for real if all the people that voted for DeAndre Swift would consider him to be in a tier with these other guys. But it makes mm-hmm. for a better radio show here if we put this split in here. So it's very possible
that
90% of the 55 that voted for Swift just barely have him at their 101, but they're going to vote for him, right? True. So we can't see that dynamic. But the issue that I would take is, you know, I think that there's two other backs that belong in the tier with them versus the overwhelming margin of victory that we saw here. That's the only issue that I would take. I think, you know, any of these top three guys, and the next two happen to be those guys, could end up being the 101 when we saw for the, you know, combine measurables, when we saw for draft position and landing spot and all those things. It could really be any one of these three guys. It's just Taylor for me at this point in the process. So that was kind of a nice lead in too to the tier two. Okay. So DeAndre Swift was the runaway 101. From a RotoViz perspective, just add a little nugget there. We do like, you know, even though he doesn't have the production, you know, the production of some of these other guys, he is going to be an age 21 rookie. And we do like younger running backs at RotoViz for sure. And so he does have that feather in his cap. Tier two is two more running backs. The next best feature backs, as you've titled this tier. I'm assuming this is going to be Dobbins and Taylor, Taylor and Dobbins. Yeah. How did it shake out?
Yeah, Dobbins did end up winning and took down, I believe, 43% of the vote. It ended up winning, but next best was 12% behind. So not as a dramatic a drop-off between him and Taylor. I thought it was actually going to be Taylor taking down the second slot, but it was Dobbins. And I think part of it is just, you know, Ohio State made it further in the playoff, and a lot it's more fresh on the mind. A lot of people don't necessarily always watch Wisconsin games as much as they might an Ohio State game. So maybe that came into play and that gave him the edge, but that was a lot closer. But it was clear, to your point, that after Taylor went at three, there was a 28% gap in between anybody else that was in that vote for the 1.03 slot. So Taylor took that down pretty definitively. So it is pretty clear to me right now that there's three running backs that are expected all three to go top 50 in the NFL draft. And if that's the case, the opportunity is probably going to be there for them to have a role early on in the career and give us some fantasy value at this position that is hard to get elite production from. But when you do, it matters. And I think that's what everyone's trying to take advantage of with the first three picks this year. I don't see much of any way that it doesn't kind of work out where there's at least three backs, one, two, three off the board come May and June, unless, you know, let's just say a super run heavy team gets their backup. You know, like let's say that the Titans draft, you know, one of these three as their two to go with Henry or something crazy like that, just because the Titans are the Titans. Or let's say it's almost like last year. If Madison had been a different back, Alexander Madison going to the Vikings, if it had been a different back that went in day two to the Vikings, that would have been horrible because they would have been behind Cook. If it's that kind of situation, it would have to be something like that that would make me believe it wouldn't be just one, two, three, boom, 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 these three when it's all said and done. Are you kind of in the same boat right there?
Yeah. I actually think it would probably take like a knee injury at the combine for my top three to change. And let's hope that doesn't happen. I got a cool little nugget here on the production profiles of these three guys before we move on to the next tier.
Sure.
I want you to put them in order for me, and then I'll tell you the number. Career 200-yard rushing games. Order those three guys, 1, 2, 3.
It's definitely Taylor first, and then Dobbins, and then probably Swift.
Man, you nailed it. You nailed it. You know your college football. The margin is insane. Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah. It's not even close.
12. He had 12 200-yard rushing games in his career. Dobbins had two, and Swift had none. Now, that doesn't – it's not – there's no predictive value of any of that, but it just shows what a production monster Taylor was. And it shows, you know, it actually kind of explains some of the context around Swift's career too, right? You know, a little bit of a different running back room there with two other high draft capital NFL viable backs that he had to kind of wait his turn on. So, and different schemes and all those types of things, but just really, really interesting feather and Jonathan Taylor's cap there. Let's move on to tier three. Finally get another position besides running back. This tier, much to my dismay, only has two of my top three wide receivers in it. And I'm not shocked that my number one guy's not in there, because I don't think the community's on him yet. And this process actually showed that. So we're going to have to talk a little louder about our guy, Travis, because I think he's your guy too.
Yeah.
But who are the 104 and 105 per the Dynasty community over a 10,000 vote sample size here?
Yeah, so over that huge sample, we're looking at CeeDee Lamb in the 1.04, the fourth pick slot, actually edging out Jerry Jeudy by 15% of the vote. It wasn't a one-to-one. There were two other players involved there. In fact, I believe I had your top wide receiver also in that poll, but he actually got destroyed by CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy. CeeDee Lamb took half the votes. And keep in mind there's four players on this poll, and he took half the votes, kind of clearly taking down the fourth slot over Jeudy. I was quite a bit surprised there just because I think that I guess I thought that people just were assuming Jerry Jeudy is going to be this top 10 to 15 selection, and they're going to, you know, latch on to the idea that draft capital is going to be enough to make him succeed. Although, you know, he never really had a breakout season in college production wise. I know he won the Biletnikoff, which was huge, and he produced anyway with a bunch of studs around him. But CeeDee Lamb it made me kind of just look at the numbers again, and I realized, oh, okay, so CeeDee Lamb pretty much almost broke out as a true freshman coming in for Oklahoma. And then all it took was Hollywood being gone for him to truly break out, posting a, you know, 38% adjusted dominator rating and, having like a basically like a 90th percentile adjusted yards per team pass attempt numbers. And really overall, his adjusted production index, when you combine like some of the most sticky metrics in football, he's got like a 90th percentile production profile. So when you check those boxes and you check the film boxes, and the real NFL draft people tend to show that they like him, and they start to have him drafted, inside of the first half of the first round in mock drafts, you think, oh, okay, maybe Lamb is actually safer than Jeudy, even though Judy's been this, you know, obvious wide receiver one candidate for a long time. I never really had him in that, locked in that position. I didn't see Lamb being the one to dethrone him. Like a year ago, I wouldn't have just known, oh, obviously Lamb's going to be the wide receiver one. But here we are. And Jeudy really killed it and kind of created another tier break right after him, though, taking down 78% of the vote for the five slot, just annihilating everyone else in that poll, actually having a 62% margin of victory over the other three players involved, being a few of the players in the next two tiers. But not surprising to see these two locked in at this point.
Okay, so just to recap, that's a top five so far. The 101 is DeAndre Swift, running back out of Georgia. The 102 is J.K. Dobbins, running back out of Ohio State University. 103 is Jonathan Taylor, running back out of Wisconsin. 104 was CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma, wide receiver. And 105 was Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver, and Biletnikoff, winner out of Alabama. So now we're to tier four. It's a one-man tier. And I kind of feel like this player, in some ways, it's almost perfection or poetry that he's in a tier by himself, because he became something of an island take player as we approach the 2020 draft. You know, I think no matter what, he's a divisive player in this draft. And there's some people that love him and say, man, he actually even belongs way up there with the top three backs. And there's some people that can't forgive the sins of his production profile. And they refuse to consider context of what he faced in the program. Here's the lead is Florida State just could not do anything to help him, and everything he did was on his own. Running back Cam Akers, Travis, but he annihilated the next tier, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't really close. When you compared him in votes to the next tier, he took 53% of the vote, won by a margin of victory of 36% over the next closest player in terms of votes in this particular poll. So again, kind of looks like he's in a tier to himself, just because he doesn't have that profile that just says surefire, just lock in stud running back day one selection, just because of all that he went through at Florida State. But then on the flip side, you look at where he came from as well, and you say, this guy was like pretty much the number one recruit in the nation when he came into high school. Yes, he was a little bit odd in that he was kind of more of a wildcat quarterback slash running back in high school, but he was a five-star stud athlete that was running sub 4.5 40s in high school, just a crazy elite level athlete that projected well to the pros at a very early age. So to see him do what he did at Florida State, given the atrocious offensive line play and still have a decent receiving production profile and really to still put up two over 1,000 yard seasons and a pretty gross offensive situation is actually quite impressive. And in the games that I've charted so far for Akers, it's pretty gross. He essentially has just about 0 yards before contact in total. I think I've got almost four games done, and I'm pretty sure it's near 0 yards before contact overall in the big picture. So any yards that he's gaining, it's basically a miracle. So I'm somebody that is a believer in Cam, but I want to see him get some draft capital before I put him up in the top five, you know, along with those five players we already named.
Yeah, I think that's pretty spot on with what I would say on Akers. I don't know that I have a lot to add there. So I'm going to keep just moving to tier five. We've got two tiers left, and we'll have completed the dynasty communities, basically top 12 players. And I think that's what we're seeking to do here as a takeaway. This is going to really help you apply player value and trading for picks in your leagues. You know, this might help inform some of those deals, where these tier breaks are, where you want to be for a certain player, and help you kind of move your way around. So tier five, this is the 107 through the 110. We've got three wide receivers, and we've got a dark horse back that's been flying up the boards after playing a couple island games at the end of the college football season. So let's hear the three receivers first, Travis, and let us know what you think about there. I'll lead it off here. Sure. Kind of an upset. Henry Ruggs, the speedster wide receiver out of Alabama at 107. I mean, Ruggs really pops on tape. If I think some tape guys really like him, and some wide receiver athlete likes him, but he didn't really put together the most impressive production profile. I think API pretty much hates Ruggs, right?
Yeah, he's essentially the adjusted production index puts him in like the bottom quartile of basically all draftable players in the since 2005. So it's not ideal, but obviously he might be an exception when you look at his athleticism and what he did with the players around him. But yeah, it's still a stretch to say that he's in good standing from a production profile standpoint.
All right. So 108 and 109, I think I would have expected to see here. Who do we have there?
So we got T. Higgins from Clemson, obviously a recent favorite because of all the playoff success and being productive with one of the best quarterback prospects in the last 10 years in Trevor Lawrence. So T. Higgins takes the eighth slot, and Jalen Reagor, who I believe is your guy, our guy, takes the nine slot, just barely edging it out, though, only winning by 4% in that slot. And then to wrap it up in that tier is actually Clyde Edwards-Helaire, another college football, playoff, a recency bias pick perhaps, but somebody that really has come on strong in value here recently. So those four kind of create this tier that I feel like we're not sure, or at least the community is not quite sure, because there's something missing in their profile. With Ruggs, it's his, dominator. With Higgins, he actually doesn't have an elite production profile. Reagor, he didn't have a quarterback, and so a lot of people don't really know him at all. And I feel like if he was on a different team, the outcome might be different, right? I mean, the level of athlete that he is, the adjusted production profile that he's put on display with just some of the worst quarterback play in all of college football. I mean, I'll let you talk about Reagor for a second.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote this up. I don't know if I might have seen this in your copy for the DCC rookie guide, so I might be dropping something sooner than I should. Or I might have seen it. Yeah, I think that's where I saw it. I think it was in your API write-up. Jalen Reagor played with six quarterbacks in 3 years. Quarterbacks in 3 years. Now, I mean, do you think any of them were good? Because if they were good, he wouldn't have played with six, right?
No.
You know, and there, and he, you know, and even if the first one was good and he got hurt, you know, and maybe the second one was good, but are you getting down to six? No. And so that he was able to be productive at all in college, rather than having the production profile of something like a Henry Ruggs, is impressive. And I just, you know, I was talking about this on another podcast actually earlier today. I think that Jalen Reagor, he's 109 in this draft. I mean, I really question whether he won't be in the top six for the community after the NFL combine. Now, I would caution people to be careful about really moving wide receivers around in their rankings too much because of the combine, because actually over the course of time, the combine has proven not really be that important or that predictive of wide receiver success in the NFL. But in this case, I think the combine will highlight what people who were able to follow Reagor in college and followed TCU and you know, realize that he broke out at such a young age and he was on the radar so early, it's going to allow people a chance to catch up. This isn't a situation where we're moving a player that we knew nothing about up the board. This is just an opportunity for correction. And I think it's good that it's happening before most dynasty drafts, because, man, if you told me that this is going to be where he was actually going to settle, I mean, I'd be trying to trade for, you know, these 109, 110 picks in like every dynasty league. I would be very, very, I would feel like I'm getting a blue chip player at the end of the first round. So very, very excited about Reagor. But really, this is a really fun tier. I mean, this is like the tier of the wide range of outcome guys. But I wouldn't want the 107. I mean, if I had the 107, I'm taking Reagor out of this tier. But seeing the collection of names, I kind of like that one. I feel like 109 would get me Reagor in a draft today. And that's attractive to me. So, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you know, we talked at the top of the draft exercise so far that the valuation of the running backs, and, you know, typically you'll see running backs be at the top of a tier. I feel like that's commonplace now, but this is a example of, you know, I think if you did your poll 3 weeks earlier, Helaire's in like tier 7 or tier 8. And so he's climbing, you know, he's climbing in the tier that he's in. You know, he may still climb further. And so this is an example of him busting out of where he was before.
Yeah, and he's one of those players, if he gets the capital, he could go higher. But if he misses, maybe goes in the end of round three or something, he could actually get passed by a couple backs that are not even really in the same conversation right now. But, you know, we still have plenty of time to figure this out. But I do like this tier quite a bit. And I feel like Reagor, he's just that player. He reminds me a little bit of DJ Moore from a few years back. He was with Maryland. He also had six quarterbacks that he had to play with at Maryland. Not a great program to really put up big numbers. But I feel like we're just coming around earlier with Reagor, and he's going to do similar and probably have one of the best combines of the bunch this year. So can't wait to see what happens there. But tier six is kind of a smaller tier. I thought that there was going to be a bigger bunch after the top 10 picks. But to round out the first round, we actually have two more wide receivers in Laviska Shenault and Justin Jefferson. Both of them took about 41% for Shenault and 46% of the vote with Justin Jefferson, kind of creating another teardrop after that. But Jefferson just absolutely exploded, breaking records in the college football playoff run, thanks to Joe Burrow. And conversely, Shenault's stock just completely plummeted because he basically had the worst year of his career to end his college career this past season. So the kind of stocks going completely opposite directions, but just both land as, you know, these are speculative guys that I feel confident taking in at the end of the first round. What do you make of that? Which one would you prefer right now between Shenault and Justin Jefferson?
Man, it's really tough because, you know, a year ago, you know, I felt like Laviska Shenault was like maybe a top five guy in the class. And I'm not so sure that he's not now even. But I'm a little more worried about his landing spot and which quarterback he's with than I was before. And I'm also a little bit more worried that maybe he's more of a wide receiver two in the NFL than a wide receiver one. And I'm a little bit worried about what happens if he doesn't go to an offense that's willing to unleash all the creative types of plays that he can do. I mean, he's an excellent runner. He can even throw the ball a little bit. I mean, he's the type of guy that could be involved on every down and in any game situation. But if he just gets thrown into, you know, a traditional route running role, you know, I don't know that we're going to see the ceiling. His true ceiling would be getting with a really creative play caller. And so I'm a little bit more concerned about that. Whereas, you know, your notes on Jefferson are really interesting. I mean, when I hear you say the ideal, you know, slot wide receiver for today's NFL, I mean, my ears are perking up because I love slot wide receivers for fantasy football. I love collecting my Julian Edelmans and my Jarvis Landrys and those types of target hogs that are just going to, you know, throw down 15 to 18 PPR for me every single week. And so I'm pretty intrigued. And so I'm looking a little closer at Justin Jefferson and seeing, you know, a career dominator of 27%, which is actually pretty strong, and a breakout age of 19. And that's before Joe Burrow was as amazing as he became in the 2019 season. And I'm thinking, maybe we've got, you know, a situation here where, you know, and they're not coming out the same season, you know, but back in 2014, we had a pair of receivers come out of LSU that had very different skill sets, right? And they both have made it work in the NFL. And I'm just not so sure that Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson aren't just Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry reincarnate. And so, you know, that is very interesting. I think that I've been a little slow, admittedly, to come around on Jefferson. And seeing him fall here makes me feel a little bit better about the end of the first round. Given your notes, given on, you know, where he falls in API, being reminded of that breakout age, being reminded that he's going to be a rookie age 21 guy. He's one of the younger receivers in the class, even with his long history of production. And so, you know, I'm finding myself questioning, you know, my stance on Justin Jefferson. I had him as like a top of round two guy, and I'm not so sure that the community wasn't a little sharper on him than me.
Yeah. I mean, and just really arguing with his production profile is pretty hard just because he was the wide receiver one on LSU before they were even that good. Like just a year ago, he was dominating. So love to see what he's done. And I think he can be the perfect slot wide receiver. He's actually kind of tall, but he's a little skinny, but so he can kind of almost be like a big slot, but you can also slide him outside because he's got the length to win out there. So I think he's just got an all around skill set that I'm not as worried about his landing spot, like you said, like with the Chenault. But that rounds out the first round. Before we kind of sign off here, I do want to cover the second round, although it definitely gets muddier. The results get closer. There's less tiers, and it's less clear, especially at this point, because we haven't even gotten to the combine. But kicking it off, it's one of the most productive players that's been a Debbie favorite for a few years now. And the 2.01, this is the beginning of tier 7, Tyler Johnson, Minnesota. Had crazy production. I think he posted like a 73% adjusted dominator a few years ago. Just crazy production profile, but not getting any buzz right now from real NFL people, which is concerning. And then you got Joe Burrow, obviously basically the best college football season maybe ever by a quarterback, coming out and obviously being in place to potentially be the number one overall pick in the real NFL draft. And then to wrap up that tier, you've got Bryan Edwards, who is another crazy solid producer at an early age. He had like a breakout age of like 17 in his freshman year, but obviously had some QB troubles and couldn't put up huge raw numbers this past year. So we've got these three players to start off round two. There are some questions there because Burrow had the late breakout. He's like 24. Tyler Johnson, he might not get the draft capital. Bryan Edwards might not even get the draft capital. So what are you doing here at the beginning of round two if your rookie draft was today?
I'm probably trying to trade up into the back of round one, adding a little bit of gravy. If I had to select from these three players, I would still, and it was drafting today, I would take Tyler Johnson on the elite production profile and pray for the draft capital. That's what I would do given the choice of those three players at like the 201. Yeah. Yeah. And that's about, actually, that's right about where I've got Tyler Johnson in my own rankings as well. I think what's kind of interesting is Burrow going so high, even in a single QB format, which was how you set these polls up. I think some of the recent success we've seen from rookie QBs has helped return some value to that position, relative value to that position in the eyes of drafters. It was only a few short years ago where, you know, I feel like people would get ridiculed for even taking a quarterback before round three in a single QB format and dynasty. And so, you know, to see Burrow here at 202, that's not too far off of where we saw Kyler Murray last year, and he's team Konami code. So this is a little high for Burrow for me. But Tyler Johnson's my guy there. Is that who you'd be on as well?
Yeah, I think this perfectly captures it, because I don't know what to do with Tyler Johnson or Bryan Edwards, because for me, they could be in this tier, or if they get the capital, they're both in the first round. If they don't get the elite draft capital, they're probably at the end of the second round for me. So they're both players that could swing one way or the other, but I love them from a production standpoint. Like in my adjusted production index, when looking at players since 2005, Tyler Johnson has the fourth strongest, just raw, you know, adjusted, production index of all players to enter the league. So if he does get the capital, he basically falls into a category of player that's literally never missed. The players that have higher scores than him, it's a very short list of elite producers in the NFL. So I'm not really sure what to do at this point, but Johnson's probably the pick right here. But I can't wait to see Bryan Edwards just wow some people, just have like a 42-inch vert and probably run like a 4.4 something. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to see. But moving on to kind of wrap up, because the end of the second round, really from here on out, it's kind of like what I call the everyone else tier, because there's a bunch of players that could just leapfrog others, depending on whether they get the draft capital, depending on the hype surrounding their athletic profile. Lots can change right now, really from here into the NFL draft. But kicking off the tier eight at the fourth pick of the second round is Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama. He's a player that I would have as my clear superflex 1.01 had he not had the injury history, but recency bias definitely has him down a bit, because he got killed. Well, like I think it was 10-1 in favor of Joe Burrow in the pool, in the poll where they were actually both there for it. So I think Burrow actually had 42% of the vote. I think that same poll Tua had like 4%. So to see that happen in the matter of basically a month is just insane. Because if you had the same conversation, which would you prefer? It would probably be 10-1 in favor of Tua the week before he got injured. So I think people are very quickly forgetting just how good Tua was. Because, I mean, he was looking like he could be potentially the best college quarterback of all time before he went down. And then now we're having that same conversation about Joe Burrow now. Again, probably a little bit earlier than you typically see quarterbacks go in one quarterback leagues. But I'm willing to take a chance on Tua just because I still believe. Are you somebody that is holding on to hope that Tua is going to be healthy for his NFL career?
Oh, for sure. And all the early news has been pretty positive. And of the two, like you, if he had the health, it wouldn't even be a conversation, because we'd basically be talking about Russell Wilson with draft capital.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is kind of how he profiles. So absolutely would be a guy with a high floor that could even be helpful in a single QB format. I mean, even if we're not talking super flex. So I think both of these quarterbacks are so solid, you know, that I don't necessarily have if you don't want to, you know, if you're really in a spot where you just, you know, you had like Rivers and Breeze and Brady and like all the old quarterbacks and no one will trade. And I've been in dynasty leagues like that before, that even in a single QB format, just people hold on to them. And if you're in a spot where you need to replace, I think I can get behind it. It's probably not the same type of bang for your team as getting a breakout position player. But I think both of these guys have ceilings that are so high that it would justify taking them. this early in the second if your hand was forced there. So, you know, you got Tua at 204, the top of the tier. No other quarterbacks in round two. Also, no tight ends in round two from the community standpoint. The entire rest of the picture here is made up by, I'm counting three running backs and one, two, three, four, five, six receivers. So at 205, Zach Moss out of Utah, longtime producer, does everything well, does nothing great, probably. Is probably the best way to sum him up. I think he could be like a sneaky producer if he gets a shot. But Travis, your notes here in the ledger are perfect. The day two draft capital is going to be so key because even athletically, I don't expect him to be a head turner whatsoever. But, you know, to be fair, you don't have to be necessarily a head turner to still get it done in the right, you know, team situation. I mean, a lot of people wrote Devin Singletary off last year after his horrific combine. And, you know, now I'm seeing as basically he's like a consensus top 18 dynasty running back. So anything can happen. I'll let you go over 206 and then we'll kind of just run down quickly because, you know, some of these polls aren't quite finished, but 206 is a guy from a school that you've had a couple hits on in your dynasty career.
So KJ Hamler is the obvious pick to me at this range right now, knowing what we know, knowing what I think we're going to find out in the coming weeks with the NFL Combine. KJ Hamler out of Penn State, wide receiver. Some people are worried about his size. He is a little bit shorter. He's probably 5'9", but he's not like he's super scrawny. And he's probably going to run sub 4.4 in the 40. So he's going to have elite speed. He's going to have a nice athletic profile. And like you said earlier, that doesn't mean everything when it comes to wide receiver position. But just from a production standpoint, he broke out immediately when given the chance in his redshirt sophomore season, or freshman season rather. First action of college ball, he was breaking out in an elite way. Had a 31% adjusted dominator rating this past season, basically being the only viable receiving option outside of, I guess, Jahan Dotson. But somebody that I'm really excited about. I think that in the right offense, he's going to be creatively used and is going to find a home quickly and can be productive as a kick returner, can be productive as just about whatever role you want to be. Really, whatever role you want to have him in. So I'm excited to see what comes of him just because he's going to have everything going on. I think if he gets the draft capital, top 50 draft capital, he's going to be in that tier that looks like he really can't miss. But after you get past this range, it definitely becomes a little bit even more muddy because you're getting into a bunch of players that may or may not get the capital, a bunch of players that, you know, showed up at the Senior Bowl and maybe wowed here and there. But really just wrapping up the end of the second round, Brandon Ayuk for Arizona State took the 2.07. He was, you know, obviously exploded this last year. JUCO to start his college career, had some crazy productive seasons there and it was even a returner. Kind of was the wide receiver too with Harry last year, but this past season had an incredible, like 85th to 90th percentile, you know, production stuff in terms of peak production numbers. And then you have Eno Benjamin, obviously weighed in a little bit slight at the Senior Bowl. I think 195, like 5'10, 5'11, 195. Not really what you want to see. Probably profiles more of like an early day three guy now, at the 2.08. And then you got the Antonio Gandy-Golden for Liberty. Obviously that name is a mouthful, but I think we talked about him briefly before. Three back-to-back-to-back 1,000 yard seasons and 10 touchdowns. Nothing to sneeze at there. And he had a great week at the Senior Bowl. I think he impressed some people, blowing up all over Twitter. And then right now the polls are still going on for 10, 11, and 12, but it looks like it's going to be Denzel Mims from Baylor, Michael Pittman Jr. from USC, and possibly Keyshawn Vaughn from Vanderbilt to wrap up the second round. And then there's some honorable mentions that are probably going to be in some polls here, getting some votes here. A.J. Dillon from Boston College, Isaiah Hodgins from Oregon State, and Justin Herbert, the possible quarterback three from Oregon. I would imagine he might get some votes to be placed in the second round as well. But that wraps up the mega rookie draft. I just call it the 2020 rookie poll mock on Twitter. And so if you're curious to find the results, definitely check that out on my Twitter @FF_TravisM. You can follow the hashtag 2020 rookie poll mock, and you can check out, actually, I think I tagged a couple of the other Twitter polls. I've been doing this. I think this is my fifth year doing this. It's just a fun exercise to take a look at a baseline value of what consensus might be. There's a lot to take away from it. But looking back on this first, you know, round and second round, Curtis, what's your biggest takeaway from this exercise? If you were going to give some advice to dynasty owners on how to take advantage of this more than anything, what would be your advice?
I mean, it's just been a very clear reminder of the quality of the first round prospects. Again, you know, I think we talked about this in last week's episode, but I'm not scared of the 2020 class. We lost some high end prospects. This is still a draft. I want to be involved in it. You know, I want to be a player, even if I can't get, you know, one of those big name backs in the first, you know, three picks or one of the, you know, community elite receivers, we'll say, in the early mid first. I mean, I want to be a player at the back end of the first round of drafts. And so if you see these picks go on sale in your league from people who are like, I'm just punting for 2021 now, or, you know, those unsure drafters who never seem to have a plan when they get on the clock, even during your draft, and you can move in. I mean, this kind of happened for me last year. I was able to really make this work. I mean, I was able to trade what ended up being the 2020 109 after the season for, you know, Miles Sanders, because I had a strong team. Miles Sanders slid in the draft. I thought that I would have an elite pick this year. And so I've obviously made some money on that. And I think that's what you're going to see in the draft this year, is some guys that in that Higgins, Rager, Edwards-Helaire range, and even with the Chenault and Jefferson, these are all very high upside players from a fantasy perspective that could be very, very valuable, really climb up in ADP and dynasty value and make some roster equity on these guys. So still definitely interested in trading for 2021 first, or for 2020 first rather, and they may be cheaper than they were, you know, 2 to 3 weeks ago. And so that'd be my number one takeaway. And my number two takeaway is that the community needs to wake up on Jalen Rager.
Absolutely. I definitely have to say I agree there. I think that there's a lot to be taken away here, but I always try to take advantage of these every year. Just because I think a lot of people pay attention to baseline and consensus rankings. They try to find those value gaps in areas where they find the Jalen Ragers that they value over other players. They find the Tyler Johnsons. They find, you know, I was having a conversation with some people about Zach Moss and how they believe that Zach Moss is way too low. So, you know, just taking advantage of where you think players are going to go, where their market value is going to go, trade into that spot, you know, package to move up. You know, trade for future value and add, move down if you think you can get players. And it's never too early to kind of be pre-positioning yourself. Obviously, a lot's going to be changing in between now and the NFL draft, but there's current market trends that are always, they're always able to be taken advantage of. So if you have any questions on this data, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter. Again, @FF_TravisM. Definitely check out the rookie guide with DCC. We're pumped to get that out and share that, all the information in that. It's been a blast putting that together. Learn more about what me and Curtis and our team have to say about this rookie class there. But until next time, keep living that dynasty life.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium?
Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.